This is the Impunity Observer podcast. Fergus Hodgson here, and I'm so pleased to be chatting with our incredible contributor, Model Echeverria. And just a little bit of update on how we're doing these things. We are doing more, let's say, audiovisual content with the Impunity Observer, and that includes more podcast and, you know, YouTube content. And so we hope to have these out every Tuesday. So weekly, consistent. So please give us feedback on what you want to hear more of regarding the rule of law and economic development at the crossroads between Anglo and Latin America. And each month we do an investigation. It's a deeper report into, let's say, a topic that we feel there is untapped insight, right? Where we can add value to the discussion. In Model Echeverria, my colleague, he's done incredible work, especially focusing on Cuba. But today we will discuss the spike in Chinese illegal immigration to the United States and how that proceeds. It's particularly pertinent to him because he is Ecuadorian. And it turns out that a lot of the Chinese begin in Ecuador, their journeys north. Now, Moto, thank you for chatting with me, giving us your precious time. He's studying strategic communications in Portugal right now. So it must be, I don't know, what ungodly hour over there. And so, no, but he prepared this article and he's done incredible work. I really respect the work you've done, Model. And so the first question came to mind was, what is the evidence that there really has been a spike in Chinese illegals coming north to the United States in the last half year? How can we know that there are more than there were, let's say, 2 years ago or just a shorter period of time ago?
Yeah. Hey, Fergus. I'm super glad to be here. This is familiar territory for me, so I'm super glad to be here. To answer your question in a very briefly manner, there are many reports on the media, but let's not focus on media because we already know how media can talk anything, sometimes even without making much sense. So we focused firstly on U.S. Customs and Border Protection data. So we registered how we compared encounters between the 2024 fiscal year, in the first, meaning the last 4 months or 3 months of 2023 and the first month of 2024, and the same period in the previous year. So we found that there was a spike of, compared the same period, removing the seasonality effect. There was a spike of, for example, two or even almost three times the same period in Chinese encounters, according to the U.S. Customs and Border Protection information.
Yeah, and there were other elements too. So yes, of course, we have the border data. From the United States, but you found other interesting insights that there was a spike in online searches for the term for Chinese people looking to come or make the journey. And there was other data from, I think, was it medical checkups in Ecuador? So we have it, the evidence is compelling. Do you want to clarify that broader data that backed up your case that there was a spike?
Oh, yeah, sure. So in a broader sense, we also gathered information from a report from Ecuador, a local outlet called Primicias, that started noticing this higher number of Chinese migrants coming to Ecuador. And how did the media outlet get to know this or first notice this growing flow of people? It was that they noticed that a lot of Chinese illegal immigrants were getting vaccinated at Ecuadorian centers for vaccination. And it was at first surprising for doctors and medical workers. So it became a huge news. And then also we did in the investigation, we did an analysis with Google Trends on how Soushan, that is the word term coined by Chinese immigrants, that describes like the journey they do from South America to the United States. And basically, they start this journey going to Ecuador. And why is this? It's because Ecuador is one, or if I'm not mistaken, the only South American country that does not require Chinese citizens to a visa for at least a night for staying 90 days in the country. So that's why they take advantage of this window, let's say, and they, in this sense, they use this time and they travel to other countries in South America in an illegal manner, mostly.
And just to give people a sense, now, I'm not sure whether this is just the tip of the iceberg, but customs and border protection data suggests that by the end of 2023, the numbers of Chinese was, it's not quite 10,000 per month. So about, it's about 100,000 per year, which is a meaningful number, right? It's a solid number of people every year coming in just from China. Now, of course, that is probably only about 5% of the total, if, assuming that there are a couple million of other people coming in. But the, this is meaningful in particular because it is a change from before, right? That before the Chinese were not coming in such great numbers, and now they're almost two or three times the levels just recently. Okay. And yeah, they go to Ecuador because Ecuador is explicitly open, right? And then how do they, I mean, I sometimes I just wonder how on earth these people make it all the way to the United States and do not get killed or do not run out of money. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting because this is the journey that many South Americans do. And we already know it's common for South Americans to go from country to country traveling. But for Chinese citizens, there are even bigger challenges, language barrier, just not knowing what they're facing, because many South Americans are sort of aware of some of the dangers that they will face along the way. But Chinese, it's just something completely different. And this is where also social media has played a huge role. For example, some social media networks that, or platforms such as TikTok, or I think they call it Douyin in China. But they have allowed Chinese people who are considering migrating from South America to North America, and specifically the United States, they get a sense of how these people are going, how previous migrants are already, their experiences, their what they are living, they are going through. But it is really interesting to see how they face many challenges in the sense that they have to cross the Darien Gap, for example, traveling from Ecuador. First of all, traveling from Ecuador to Colombia, it's relatively easy. For any Spanish-speaking person, it's relatively easy. If you want to travel illegally, it's also super easy. You pay $10, $20 to get someone to cross you to the border. And they leave you right in Colombia, and then you have to travel by bus to cities near the border, for example, with Panama. You travel, for example, from the south of Colombia to Medellin, and then to the north of Colombia to cross the Darien Gap, which is in the border between Panama and Colombia. So that's how they start. And the Darien Gap is also, as we've reported in the Impunity Observer, the Darien Gap is one of the most dangerous, like, zones for an illegal immigrant, because they face multiple dangers such as gang violence, just people abusing immigrants who are facing situations that they don't have any money, they don't have clothes, they don't have food. They are really vulnerable in that sense. So they have to face all of this in addition, in a different language, in a different culture, in a setting that they don't know what they are getting into.
Yeah, and there's a term in your article which was new to me, trochas, and I'm aware that yes, getting between Ecuador and Colombia is relatively child's play. Is it the case that there are similar trochas between, let's say, Panama, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Honduras, Guatemala, right? And so really the only big hurdle is, like you said, this Darien Gap, this kind of no man's land between Colombia and Panama.
Definitely. I would say that the Darien Gap is probably the biggest challenge, even biggest in the sense bigger than crossing from Mexico to the United States. Although this does not make it cheaper, if I'm explaining myself correctly, because for foreign immigrants that are not from Mexico, and even worse, not from Latin America, coyotes that are these human smugglers that smuggle humans from the southern border of the United States to the United States, they charge around $10,000 to $20,000 per person for crossing the border.
Just the Darien Gap, or where the
No, this is just from Mexico to the US. In the
right.
Darien Gap, the prices round about, for example, if it's the cheapest route, which is the most dangerous, of course, they charge around $500.
Cheapest, you say most dangerous in terms of what? You're going to get hijacked?
Exactly. I say the cheapest route in terms of money is the most dangerous in terms of personal security, in terms of getting caught between gang violence or getting just robbed. So in between the Darien Gap, you range about like there's, and this is just to cross a small piece of land, and authorities basically do not care about this piece of land. So it's just to cross them a territory that is basically jungle. So they charge up to almost $2,000 per person.
Yeah, and there's actually another piece of data here, which I think was interesting to add to your case, that this is not, it is, let's say, an outlier, that the Chinese, it has spiked, that not only do we have the hospital data in Ecuador and the Customs and Border Patrol data and the search engine data, even the Colombian officials have found more Chinese along their border. And they had them only behind Venezuelans and Haitians. And we all know that, yes, there's a big pipeline of Venezuelans and Haitians. So for Chinese to be, third behind them is not exactly surprising. Right. Okay. And you say, yeah, once you get to Mexico, you've still got to pay $20,000 to get across the border. Are people just trying to skip the whole border crossing and just go to, I mean, the whole illegal crossing, and just go to an actual border entry point and just declare, I'm here, I want asylum?
Yeah, I mean that's also the case for a lot of people, but it's crossing illegal crossings through coyotes. There are these cases. The thing is that with illegal migration, the southern border is that it depends how the word spreads around. It's a mouth of mouth kind of thing. So I've been talking to people in foster homes or this kind of shelters for immigrants for the last possibly 2 years, and these trends tend to change up really fast. Sometimes they say, like, they spread the word that yeah, they should just go to the entrance point and declare themselves that they want asylum, but also there are sometimes that they say, like, no, let's be cautious, let's pay our coyote and let's cross the border, and once we're in US territory, we can then ask for asylum. So it's something that really varies according to the time.
Yeah, and you note here that even if you pay the money, the coyotes cannot guarantee your security, because there'll be other gangs that they are competing with or fighting with. And you speculate briefly as to why there has been this spike. And one reason, well, there are a few reasons. One, unemployment in China. Two, let's say a more suffocated or just less free environment since all the COVID lockdowns. Did you find any evidence that this was a deliberate, let's say, initiative by the communist regime in China?
In that sense, I was not able to find evidence that this was deliberately or purposely done by the Chinese dictatorship. Because, and this is the case, for example, for Cuban. Many times the Cuban dictatorship does this in purpose, or the Nicaraguan does this in purpose. So it wouldn't be surprising at all for the Chinese dictatorship to do this on purpose. However, I wasn't able to find any about this, any information regarding this topic, but we could see that Chinese, many Chinese people, especially perceive this lack of opportunity. And in that sense, the Chinese markets are usually like crowded with state or dictatorship owned companies. So in that sense, who knows?
Yeah, it's right. It is tough to either prove or disprove, right? Whether it's a deliberate policy or strategy of the Chinese regime. But as you note, it would not be unique that other regimes have basically decided, just get out of here if you want to. We don't need you. And the famous one with Cuba was the Mariel boat lift. And I think there's even because there was the initial, let's say early 1960s lift, then the Mariel boat lift in the 1980s. And there's actually a third major shift of Cubans to the United States right now, which surprises me. Yeah.
Yeah, the thing about Cuba is that it also benefits the dictatorship because they get rid of those people who are most uncomfortable living in a dictatorship. So they have less people that will try to somehow riot, less people that will hunger strike, that will make the news somehow and possibly get. I know this has been going on for a long time and it may. Basically, everyone has forgotten about Cuba, but in a way, they want people who can make noise and attract foreign news and whatever. And they want those people out. And they, in fact, between dictatorships, they help each other, as we know, as it's common practice between them. And so, for example, they use the airline Conviasa, which is owned by the Nicolas Maduro dictatorship in Venezuela. And that's one of the most common airlines in Cuba. And it flies from La Habana to Managua, Nicaragua, for example, or from La Habana to Caracas, Venezuela. And those are the most common routes. So it's not hard to tell that they are all working between each other. And they know that this exodus of people that are uncomfortable with the regime will end up benefiting the dictatorships.
Yeah, folks, we've been speaking with Mauro Echeverria, an Ecuadorian national studying in Portugal or Portugal. And he has a great investigation out how Chinese illegals get to the United States. This is groundbreaking, you know, top quality content you'll not find anywhere else. I'm very proud to promote it. And basically he explains not just the how, but let's say, not just the actual journey, but the context, why China is now, outside of Latin American countries, the largest sender of illegal immigrants to the United States. So that's a heck of a lot. And along the Colombian border, it's only behind Venezuela and Haiti right now. So, Mauro, I'm proud of your work. Where should people go to follow you? Are you active on X, or you want people to follow you on LinkedIn?
Either one. They can follow me on X. I'm not really that much active on X. However, they can follow me on LinkedIn, which I'm not also that active, but hopefully I'll have some time.
Okay, yeah. Mauro, I'm just wishing you the best with your studies in Portugal, and I hope we can have you back working one of these days. Otherwise, thanks for explaining this latest piece by you. Cheers.